a beautiful evening out here in Cape Town. It is the first Thursday radio edition, a syndicated show, and the continuation of our lockdown edition with the Western Cape Premier Alan Windey back in studio this evening. From 6 till 7, we're doing it here, another live Q&A with regards to COVID-19, the new normal, and the provincial government's response. For you that we've, for the past couple of days, we've asked you to send us your messages that you would like the Premier to answer on WhatsApp. The number, of course, is 0618621065, or also you can SMS the keyword COVID-19 to 32158. Followed by your question, name, and area in which you reside. Each SMS costs R1. The show is brought to you by the Western Cape Government. Better together. Now, Premier, it is good to see you again. Welcome to another edition, another month. So many things have been happening since the last time we have spoken. And the one thing that's now come up, which is, and it's the phrase that everyone's using around the world, is has the new normal impacted you and your office in a day-to-day operation?
Well, good day, and it's really great to be back again. And you, am I loud enough?
Yeah.
Much better. So it's really great to be back, and thank you. The new normal. The new normal, I think, is changing everyone's lives, and business is changing around the world. And life is changing around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, some cases it really perturbs me because it's actually not a very comfortable space to be in. So many people without an income, so many people hungry, no electricity, they're the missing middle, they can't get a UIF payment, they don't get a grant. So we're dealing with some serious new normals. But at the same time also, people that are on front line, you know, if you're a nurse, if you, as we've seen in this last week, if you work in an ambulance service, even if you work in one of our retailers, from a small little spaza shop to a great big, you know, hypermarket, everyone is frontline, and there's a new way of doing things. Social distancing, hand sanitizer. I mean, right where I'm sitting here, there's a whole lot of hand sanitizers around.
Yeah.
You know, masks. The new normal is with us, and it's going to be with us for a long time.
Yeah, and if you know, moving on, especially if a lot of things has been happening now, you've got people working from home, so an online world. How will artisan services and skills development be impacted?
Well, I think first of all, you know, I mean, it's all very well giving me that question, but our entrepreneurs are the amazing people who come up with such amazing new ideas. So obviously, you know, training, education, it had already started before COVID. It's now just ramping up. So you're going to be learning things, and you're going to be doing things without going into a classroom. I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Services is going to be different because, I mean, sure, there's the online services, the back office processing. That was already there.
Yeah.
But what other services and how are they going to change? Because you can't change hairdressing. You can't change. I mean, so there's going to be many things that you're not able to change. And I also think that, you know, at the moment, everybody's doing everything in isolation, and people also need people.
Yeah.
People need human contact. So, I mean, I think it's going to be different, but I mean, eventually when we've got through COVID-19 and we're getting back to that new normal, but a semi-new normal, I mean, obviously everyone says it's cool working on your meetings and your teams and your Zooms, and but if you speak to everyone, they say, wow, I'm missing the team at the office, or I'm missing the guys at the factory, or I'm missing the, you know, and everybody's got some space.
But
even if it's just getting together at some coffee shop, people are missing that.
Yeah, that connection. But here's a message that just came through. It's a message saying, good day, Mr. Premier. I would like to thank the national and provincial governments for all you are doing at this time. It's with pride that I count myself as a part of South Africa. Keep up the good work, and may we all get to the end of this time as safely, humanly, and introspectively grateful. So they're very thankful for what you're currently doing. And another question that just came through is, Alan Windy was interviewed on ENCA last week about the exercise time slot. He said that it should be extended or maybe have two slots. In winter, the sun only rises at 8 o'clock in Cape Town. It's dangerous in all areas to go running or walking in the dark. With winter approaching, it gets very cold in a month. People are more likely to get cold and flu if they are forced to do exercise in the early morning before sunrise. Question one, how did government decide that this was a good idea for the nation?
Can I first say that the previous comment, thank you very much for just sending that message through. I mean, this is national government, provincial government, local government. This is citizens. We're all on the same side in this war.
Yes.
And we've got to make sure we get through it to the other side. And we can only do it if we all work together. I think the regulations, I think huge frustration, especially now. You know, everybody was happy to go to your first of lockdown, and then we extended the lockdown. And now everyone's questioning the regulations. I mean, really, the lockdown gave us time to help with our health response, preparedness. There are a number of questions around a number of the regulations. Specifically this one, I still agree. But, of course, under the disaster declaration, the national government has the mandate to put regulations in place. Our job is to say this is what we think is not this doesn't seem to work for us. So, for example, the times. I also think it doesn't make sense to tell people to exercise in a small space of time.
Yes.
Because you're bottlenecking and we want to try and spread people out. So we have made application to say, listen, this regulation doesn't make any sense. We need to work on it. But along with a whole lot of other regulations that we don't think actually make sense. Of course, we also understand that everybody who owns a business thinks that they all have to open their business in level four. And, of course, that can't be. But there are some businesses as well that we think should be able to be open, so we've motivated there as well. I think we put 47 different motivations to change the regulations.
Yes.
13 have been changed and 7 partially changed. So we're still working on it. We've got a team that works on it with the national team to try and motivate and say this is how we should change those regulations. And, of course, this exercise one definitely should be changed.
Thank you. So for all our listeners out there, if you'd want to SMS your messages, it's 32158. Keyword is COVID-19, of course. And if you'd like to call, the number is 021-448-6266. The WhatsApp number is 061-862-1065. Also, we're on Facebook Live as well. If you'd like to submit your question on Facebook Live, you're most welcome to do so as well. And we will read out that question as well for you. There has been much talk about the fourth industrial revolution. Is that the direct spin-off of COVID-19?
Definitely not. I mean, we've been in the midst of the fourth industrial revolution now for a few years with big data and machine learning and all sorts. But I think what definitely has happened is the COVID-19 virus across the world has almost leapfrogged everybody directly into the middle of this new world of ours. And that's very, very, I think, one of those things that is helping us because it's speeding things up. But, of course, there's risks, you know. Some of the businesses that were kind of part of the past world are not going to make it. Mm-hmm. And this is where our innovators and our entrepreneurs have got to become quite clever.
Yes.
Because you've got to think about what are the new businesses. And everyone who is always talking about it's coming, mm-hmm. Well, it's here. Mm-hmm. And now we're in the middle of it. You must reinvent. You must make sure that you find ways to build sustainable businesses. And, of course, there's a whole lot of new businesses opening up. I mean, quite frankly, in level four, with suddenly restaurants being told, if you want, you can't open your restaurant for tables and chairs, but what you can do is you can produce food, and now that food needs to be delivered to someone who orders it.
Yes.
So who's going to do the app design? Who's going to, you know, set up the little business that's going to have the scooters or the bicycles or whatever? You're going to get that product. So no matter where you are across the province, now suddenly you've got to think differently, and there's opportunity at the same time.
Okay. We've got a caller coming through, so we just a question for you. Hi there to our caller. Hello. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi, man. Would you like...
Hi, you're speaking to Enrico Oxen, but can I pose my question?
Yeah, you may.
Yeah. Mr. Wender, good evening. I just want to ask, man, the COVID numbers here in the province that we live in here in Western Cape, it continues to rise. So with that in mind, do you think it makes sense that people, in especially this province in the Western Cape, are allowed to, for example, go jogging or request to go do yoga at the beach? And we even see a few very privileged people who see it as their right, basically, to go surfing during a pandemic. Does that make sense to you if we take into account our numbers here in Western Cape? And our numbers here now make up more than half of the total numbers in South Africa. So do you think it makes sense that some people really see it as their right almost to go jogging or to go surfing or to go do yoga at the beach? Thank you.
Okay, a really great question. Thank you. I think it was Mr. Hotzenberg. Thank you, Mr. Hotzenberg. Obviously, we've seen the protest around surfing, so surfing is actually not allowed in this regulation. But then again, the first question around times, I mean, whether you can go for a jog or an exercise, I think we need to allow people to be able to exercise. It is about, you know, holding back the spread. But we must also remember that the numbers that we're dealing with right now are not because we've suddenly been allowed to jog in the morning. We're dealing with the numbers now because of two reasons. One, they were all came out of level 5 because, you know, they were tested, and we're only getting those tests and reporting them now.
Correct.
And secondly, the virus itself, we are saying that we are testing more. So at one stage we were testing, we're 10% of the population of South Africa. 3 weeks ago we were testing 16% of the tests. Then it went up to 30%. We're back down to 20%. So we're testing way more. But it's encouraging for me to see other provinces now also testing more, because the more you test, the more you're going to find. And so I keep on saying to people, if you want us to have a low number of cases, I'll stop testing and then we'll have no cases. But that's not realistic, and that's not actually why I have been encouraging everyone from the beginning. Testing, testing, testing. It gets you to get a real picture of where we're at. We're not going to not have the peak, and we're not going to not all, or many of us are going to get this virus. We don't want to all get it at the same time, and we need to manage it. So it's not about whether you can be out and jog or not.
Yeah.
It's about making sure that the new normal is wearing a mask, following the hygiene practices, because we also have to get back to work. There are too many people who are sitting at home without any income, and if we lose, already they're saying we're going to lose 27,000 SMME businesses just in the Western Cape. These are small guys with their little electrical business or their plumbing business, or, you know, they were supplying some product or something, and they are under serious pressure. They're the missing middle, and we need to try and get people back to work. So, I mean, even more importantly, it's about opening up for business. But are we ready from a health point of view? Now, we're not 100% there yet, but we are almost there.
Mm-hmm. Continue to send in if you'd like to call. It is our first Thursday radio edition syndicated show with our guest, the Western Cape Premier Alan Windy. You can call us on studio. The number is 021-448-6266, or even WhatsApp. The number, of course, is 0618621065. If you'd like to SMS us, the keyword is COVID-19 to the number 32158. The question that's also coming, Premier, is with regards to what harm would it do if supermarkets who have wine section be allowed to sell wine, providing one buys groceries at the same time?
Okay, so that almost sounds like the cigarette argument as well. I spoke about some of the regulations that don't make sense to me. That's the same thing. Obviously, you know, we are all free citizens, and we are doing what we're doing to try and slow the spread of a virus. I always ask the question, if what you're proposing to change in the regulation, is it going to speed up the virus or slow it down? Now, of course, I think that was the cigarette argument that I had a few weeks ago. At the moment, if I've got to put energy, I'll put an energy into an SMME. But I agree that, you know, it doesn't make sense to me. I think between cigarettes and alcohol, there is an issue with alcohol. If alcohol is going to make you lose your management skills to keep your social distancing in place, mm-hmm. well, then it's a bad thing. But if someone's going to be responsibly buying some alcohol, and we did put our position was, let's say that alcohol could open up but for a few hours a day with a maximum spend. So you couldn't go and buy thousands of rands worth of product. You could buy an amount, and it would be for so many hours a day. But, I mean, that's in that same regulation, the same answer. There are a couple of regulations that I think should change, but, of course, at the end of the day, we motivate for it. But, unfortunately, we haven't had those changes yet.
Mm-hmm. A question here from Razan Poole from Facebook Live. Why are bakeries allowed to operate, but home bakers can't?
Okay, now, I don't actually get that question. I mean, a home baker, I presume that that's someone who actually bakes to sell to, and as far as I'm concerned, I presume that you could get a license to operate.
To operate.
There are about 3,300 permits already been issued to small spaza shops to small businesses. And if you're producing a food product, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't be able to get that permit. Just email service@westerncape.gov.za or business support@westro.co.za.
Also, another question here from, I think it's Sharon Gordon. Why can't estate agents operate at all?
Okay, so, I mean, this is also, I mean, everybody thinks that all their businesses should be able to operate on level 4. Obviously, an estate agency selling a house online, I mean, I don't see a problem with that at all. But the problem is when someone is going to phone me up and say, I'm bringing 10 people to come and have a look, they'll all come at different times to come and have a look at your home, and this is where it becomes difficult. So, you know, is that going to be a contact point? I mean, I'm certain that it won't be long until that will be open, but right now it's seen as an extra space of contact, so that's probably why not. But, you know, I think this is also where we start to motivate. I think that estate agents only come back online in level 2. But then I also want to say to the estate agents, motivate, put your own business plans in place of how you will manage the new normal. What does that mean? It will mean you'll be an online business. You will have certain protocols of how you visit people's homes, how you show them, how their contact happens. I mean, you've got to put that in place. That's your business protocol. And then you can motivate to say, we think we shouldn't be at level 2. We should be at level 3 because of these reasons. And then that's, again, we'll see what we can do. We can motivate. We've gone sector by sector. And, you know, some should be open at different, at sort of higher levels. And we'll motivate if that kind of protocol makes sense.
The last discussion that we had, one of the questions that came up with regards to the testing, how is that coming along? I've received a question here, is when is the door-to-door testing starting in places like Atlantis, Marmory and Pela?
Okay, I haven't got the, you know, where it is in front of me. It has already happened in Atlantis. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, what happens, we're on 300,000 now of the screening and testing. I'd have to double check that, but you can also check it on our website when we move to different areas.
Yeah.
I must also say that we are focusing on what we call the bushfire areas or the hotspot areas. So, for example, at the moment, Khayelitsha, Dunoon, Witzenberg out in Ceres, those are hotspot areas, and so there's a lot more focus in those areas. But, of course, those teams are also moving out. We advertise every day of where we're going to.
Okay. The new normal will undoubtedly influence study and career choices, and that is a bone of contention. How would you advise prospective students to rethink these in terms of job security?
So what is business going to look like post-COVID-19? So it could be back to normal 100%, but I doubt it. I think it's going to be a new normal. People are all saying there's going to be a second phase of this virus. I think we've got to learn from the virus. We know that the last time the world had a major flu epidemic,
yes,
it took years to come out of it. So if we have to say in the next few years, you need to make career choices, I would say tech. I think that makes a lot of sense. If you're able to innovate and you're an entrepreneur, think about services that people were getting that they're not getting now, and then probably say, well, how do I deliver that service but in a new way, in a different way, where people don't congregate anymore? So I think that's the space to operate in. I think online businesses are just going to grow exponentially. But then what does that mean? We said it earlier. So now suddenly a courier business is going to be a different business. A delivery business is going to be a different business. I think there's going to be lots of scope there. The pressure is going to be on those businesses that are in their minds are not going to be able to change. And, I mean, that's where it's going to be difficult and we're going to lose those jobs. So we're going to have to get our entrepreneurs to, you know, spend this time, you know, thinking about what it's going to be like. Is a restaurant going to have a robot taking your order?
Correct.
So if that's going to happen, well, I don't want to be a waitron anymore. So it's that kind of thinking, which is tough because there are a lot of jobs that we've probably been preparing for, and now suddenly they're not going to be there.
Yeah. Currently, somebody I'm bringing in the U.S. as well, in Washington, where you can actually get a little robot. You get your thingies from your goodies from a little shop, and they put a little thingy, and you got the app, and it comes to your home. That's the way they're kind of being innovative. Just another question here from someone just forwarded this message as well. Why are the Tigerberg District COVID-19 infections increasing at such an alarming rate, and where in Tigerberg districts are the hotspots located?
Okay, so I haven't got that map in front of me, and we do it by district at the moment because we are a little bit worried about how people use information. But in the next week or so, I want us to go down to ward level, so you will be able to see much more granular detail on our dashboard. I'm not entirely sure exactly where all those hotspots are in the Tigerberg, but Tigerberg is one of the areas that is growing. And of course, it will be linked to, at the moment, under level 5, it was clinics, police stations, and shopping malls and retail outlets where the virus was spreading from. So it could be linked to those kind of businesses in that area. But I think we've now moved beyond that. We're now in community transmission. So you might have picked it up because you worked at some agri-processing plant. But we've moved on from where it's even difficult to trace that now. It's because you're in an area where you've actually then shopped somewhere. You've maybe chatted over the fence where you shouldn't have, and maybe when you walked down the road, you sneezed and your mask wasn't protecting you enough. So it's community transmission. But we will give that granular detail, I hope, in the next week or so, so people can actually go and have a look at which ward it is growing in very fast. But Tigerberg, as I said, Khayelitsha, but Tigerberg is also one of the regions that's growing.
Okay. So continue to send your message. If you'd like to call us in studio, the number is 021-448-6266. Also via WhatsApp, the number here is 061-862-1065. Of course, SMS, a keyword COVID-19 to 32158, followed by your question, name, and the area in which you reside. Premier, another question that's just come up here as well. Parents expected to resume work in level 4, and essential working parents have no guidance on the movement of their children during working hours. The current rules around workers employed in private homes does not address this matter or apply to the majority of parents, especially taking into account that schoolwork is handed out on a weekly and daily basis. The question is, therefore, how does the current level 4 regulation address movement of children of working parents to a residence with adult supervision, such as grandparent, aunt, etc., where no other help is available at the primary residence during working hours. This is the Western Cape resident that's asking this question.
So essential workers were able to do that even in level 5. You could motivate that you could, you know, if you were, you had to drop your child off because you're a nurse and your granny's going to look after your child. Obviously, when that happens, you've also got to understand the risks because you are putting granny at risk.
Yes.
But, I mean, obviously some people don't have a choice. And that's why there's been a lot of motivation to say, how do we get ECDs operational again? And this is the difficult part of level 4 and level 3, and how do we motivate in level 4? And I look at the analysis of risk, and children, the risk is so minimal. And it's not whether it's risk here, it's across the world and what we've built up over time.
Yes.
So we really are motivating that we actually do enable much more of the ECD type. And even, you know, I mean, you can see there's a big debate going on about schools at the moment. My opinion, looking at the risk data, is that it's not our children that are at risk in the school environment. But all of this comes down to the level, and I know that it is a problem. We are busy motivating at the moment. And, of course, if the specific individual is finding a problem with it, again, please just send us a message at service@westerncape.gov.za, and we will specifically take up your individual case and see what we can do to try and help you.
Okay. A question here from Anne. Is it Topani Anne? Okay, and her question is, why are beaches and pathways around then off limits if they are still within 5 kilometers? Mm. That's the question.
Okay, so this again, it comes down to the interpretation of the regulations and also the within 5 kilometers. So I understand the within 5 kilometers because you don't want people just going all over the place. But I also have a little bit of an issue with that, and I'll get to that secondly. But I don't know. I don't know what the motivation was. I have to surmise, because I wasn't in those discussions. I wasn't part of that regulatory environment when those regulations were being crafted.
Yes.
It's not only in South Africa. I mean, in Australia, you weren't allowed to go to the beach either. So I presume, and now this is where I've got to say I presume, when the drafters of the regulations, they were saying, well, if we open the beaches, well, then surely people are going to go and congregate on the beach, so maybe that's not such a good idea. That's all I can think.
Mm-hmm.
Because, quite frankly, if you're walking down, if you're going for a walk and you can walk on the beach rather than on the pathway, I mean, it's lovely walking on the beach, as long as you're following the rules of social distancing and masks and hygiene, etc., etc. You live, you know, out somewhere between Musenberg, Mitchell's Plain, you know, out all the way to Warden's Bay. If you live anywhere along that coastline, Monwabisi Beach. I mean, why not go for a healthy walk along the beach? It makes sense to me. But I don't really know, and we will continue to try and motivate that changes, because that doesn't really, I think being healthy as a citizen and having your mind right, etc., is actually much better for you in fighting this virus than not, than getting angry because I can't step off the path. I'm just trying to think what the second part was.
The question is with regards to, it was in terms of the kilometers, 5 kilometers, they're still within 5 kilometers.
I know that last Saturday I went myself to go and have a look at what it was going to be like at the promenade.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there was not as many people as the day before. That was chaotic. But I also think afterwards, you know, I think, well, what did you think? If you lock a whole lot of people up for 5 weeks and then you say you can come out of your apartment, people are going to get outside. And there's only 3 hours to do it in, and half of it's dark. But there were less people. But one of the issues that people were taking up were people were driving there. And I thought about that as well, and I thought that didn't make sense to me either. Because if you live in a place where perhaps it's dangerous to go for a walk.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we must understand, we've got parts of our city that have got gangsters, and why can't you actually go for a drive and go and walk along a promenade? And that also doesn't make sense to me, because I understand you don't want to have everybody driving around all over the place, but, you know, we are all citizens trying to do our best to fight this virus We don't want to live in a police state. We want to live in a state where we are responsible in dealing with this virus, and that's where we need to move towards, because, you know, we can't stay at level 4 forever. We've got to actually start loosening up, and we've all got to be part of that new normal,
yeah.
And that new normal means we take responsibility.
Okay. So continue sending your messages via Facebook Live, and also if you'd like to send us a WhatsApp message, the number is 061-862-1065. Of course, your SMS keyword covered 19 to 32158. A question that this is coming via SMS: can you tell me why foreign employees are not getting any money from UIF, even though they are have contributed to the fund?
I don't know. It drives me crazy. So you've been paying. You've got a permit. You're legally here. You've been paying your UIF, and now suddenly because you don't have an ID number, you can't get your... I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all. I actually had a discussion with the head of Department of Economic Development today, because he was on the press con with me today, and they are busy working on it to try and find an answer,
mm-hmm.
because it can be that you contribute, and then when you need it, you can't get it back again. So that doesn't... I mean, it doesn't... If you legally were in the country, you had your paperwork all in place, and you were contributing, you should be able to get your unemployment. And we are working on it. We also know there's another... that's not the only issue. There's quite a few issues around mm-hmm. the UIF payments that have to be worked on, but we're busy on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's another question coming in here from Kristen Wilkins. Okay, the question is, can bike shops open? People use bikes to commute, and we need... what's it? Maintenance? Also, cycling. Is cycling allowed? How do you respond to that?
You know, it's another one of my headaches. And, you know, my problem is that I'm a cyclist, so this really aggravates me even more. And especially when we have amazing cycling advocates who pose these kind of questions. I don't understand why not. I do know that it has been raised as well at a national level. There is to commute, you can commute. If you want to go to the shop to buy your groceries, you can go by bicycle. It's a vehicle. You can do it. Right now you can. I wouldn't go to the shop to buy groceries in Lycra after 9 o'clock. Let's do it once we've changed the hours, because don't antagonize our police. Let's work through this process. But there's nothing stopping you. So the question is, why can't you then? I've got a flat tire and I need someone to fix it, or my spoke is broken. And I say, I don't understand it. We are really working hard that it actually enables those shops. Because you can, a motorbike shop can open up because they can provide spares to the essential delivery guys who are delivering food now on level 4 from the restaurants who have now rejigged their business. But if you were delivering on a bicycle, you wouldn't be able to get a repair done, and it doesn't make sense mm-hmm. to me.
A message here also come all the way from Atlantis, from Charlene. She's saying, Premier, can you please come out to Atlantis and investigate High Sense Atlantis, as these people are not working under proper COVID-19 regulations. There is no social distancing or running water at this factory. This is a ticking time bomb.
Wow. Okay, no problem. I will make a note of that. I'm not sure if I'll get there, but I'll definitely get someone from our Economic Development Department out there.
Okay.
ASAP.
So please continue to send your messages via WhatsApp. Of course, the number is 061-862-1065. And of course, if you'd like to SMS, the SMS, the keyword covered 19 to 32158, followed by your question, name, and the area in which you reside. Under the new normal, how would social distancing impact businesses in the entertainment and leisure space, like cinemas and spas, restaurants, clubs, concerts, etc.? How's that taken?
So right now, I mean, those businesses are not going to be able to open. And this is where they really are applying their mind. So I did see that in other parts of the world, and I'm sure there was an email that came through to us that said, how do we get the old drive-ins going again? Well, that's a way of getting a movie going where you can actually, you know, social distance and get to watch your movie. I'm not sure how many old drive-ins are still around that you can get it going, but, I mean, there's an opportunity.
Going back to basics.
Correct. Or understanding. I mean, but then there's another side to that debate. So I'm not sure if anybody's been following the debate with the airlines, because all these airlines, which are worth billions and billions, and they're not flying anywhere, they're all sitting on the ground. And to get themselves up and running, they are busy saying, well, what is our business going to look like? So somebody says, well, we'll take every second seat out of the aircraft. So now suddenly the aircraft has to go half full. But then the next person says, but if we're doing a long-haul trip half full, the price for the ticket is going to be double.
Yeah.
It's not going to be viable. We're not going to be able to make that work. So they have to come up with different ideas of how social distancing in an aircraft is going to work. For example, in a restaurant, you know, now we're saying you can't open your restaurant. What does that restaurant look like? Do you have half the number of tables? Do you suddenly, are restaurants going to be little booths that have sort of perspex, sort of round things around them that you sit inside this little container or something? That's what the people are going to have to look at. And then, of course, you know, how do you go and watch rugby, you know, or go and watch football? Or, you know, it's going to be an interesting environment that we're going to be moving into. So perhaps our stadiums are going to be forced to be half full. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they won't even be allowed to go to the stadium in the beginning, like we're seeing in other parts of the world. I saw that, I think it's in Germany now, you can go and play football, but no one's allowed to go to the stadium.
Germany, very innovative, and, you know, spearheading and doing quite a lot in terms of just trying to make it easier for the citizens as well, as students from sports around the world. Question here coming through again is SMS says, why don't we open everything and go on with our lives? COVID is going to be here. 10 years from now, we know that what we have to do to be safe.
Okay, because, I mean, we don't know enough about the virus yet. We're learning all the time. We need to build up immunity. We knew that if we didn't lock down, that we would see the deaths spiking quickly and early. I'm not saying we're not going to have those deaths, but we're trying to have as few of those deaths as possible. But I'm telling you now, they're going to be in the thousands. They're not going to be in the 70s where we are now. They're going to be in the thousands. And the people that are going to die are people that are elderly and people that have those comorbidity issues. So, you know, there's a whole range of them, and those people we've got to protect, because otherwise they will die. And if we just carried on as normal, well, everyone that's got diabetes and hypertension and, you know, and old, you know, that's it. You don't have a chance to build up the immunity. Whereas the process that we're running through here and in other parts of the world is we're slowly building our immunity, as well as we are building those extra bed spaces. The CTICC hospital that we've announced is going to be the biggest COVID-19 focused hospital in South Africa. 850 beds of only COVID-19 patients. We're building two more also in the city, but smaller. I can also tell you that as we go through this process, that we're doing is preparing ourselves for it and trying to keep it from growing too fast, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. I also want to say to people, mustn't be so scared. We must be careful, especially for protecting, but we mustn't be petrified. I'll tell you a statistic. 90% of all people who get the virus will go through it at home. They might have flu-like symptoms, and some might not even have any symptoms. 90%. The 10% that need health care, they will end up in our hospitals, and 82% of them, 82% will go to our hospital, they'll get their care, and they'll go home. So, I mean, we've got a really good chance of getting through this thing.
Another question that's come through via SMS, is there a shortage of test kits given that only around 400 test results were reported yesterday?
Okay, no, so obviously those are the positives. We do about 4,000 tests a day. Our limiting factor now is not necessarily the test kits. It is going through the laboratory services. So now thousands of tests are coming into these labs, and the labs are not able to deal with it fast enough. And that's what I said right in the beginning. We've actually written to the Minister and the President. We need to change the way we do things. We need to find other ways of getting tests finished faster. So it's not really that. It's the bottleneck of the labs, mm-hmm. and we're working on how we open that up.
The other question also from the same person is what is the accuracy of these tests?
I don't know. I presume they're pretty accurate. I mean, there will always be a percentage that gives you a false negative or, you know, whatever these medical specialists talk about. We do hear about that. So there is definitely a percentage that is not that accurate. But there's also a percentage of positive cases out here that we're missing altogether because we even screen them and they, you know, all the answers are the right answers and they don't get tested, but maybe they are positive. Because remember, there's so many people who get this virus who are asymptomatic. They don't even know they've got it. And then someone else will get it. And because of the comorbidity, etc., the chances are that if they get it, they're going to die. So it is such a crazy virus, and it's unpredictable.
Mm. Okay, so if you're on Facebook Live, you'd like to send us some questions, you are most welcome to do so. We also are on WhatsApp. The number to WhatsApp is 0618621065, and you'd like to send an SMS as well. The keyword is covered 19232158, followed by your question, of course, name and area in which you reside. So please send your messages to us. In terms of travel, that's something, another question that's come through via SMS. Why can't we travel from one town to another in one province to buy essential goods?
Okay, so obviously travel was limited because travel is how you have contact and is how you spread the virus. And obviously as the levels change, wider travel is going to be okay. But it also depends on the circumstances. I actually had that question from a mayor in the Karoo in our cabinet meeting on Wednesday, where people might live in one of our small towns in the Karoo, but they need to travel you know, to go to another town because that's where their banks are.
Yes.
This was the question that the mayor actually asked me. And of course, the regulations say you can't travel. But you know, we've got to have rules, but then there's also circumstances where we must actually be able to go to our local police station and say, listen, I need to travel to this town because I have to do this at the bank and it's the only place that I can do. And you just follow the processes so we can allow ourselves to do it. But, you know, the regulations are there because we're trying to slow the virus so that we can cope. You know, I'm dreading that day, and it's going to come.
Yes.
Where I'm going to be standing there in the parking lot of one of our hospitals, and our beds are all full, and someone's going to arrive there with their mom and say, my mom needs help, and I'm going to say, I'm sorry, all the beds are full.
Yeah.
Wow, that's going to be hectic. And the only way we stop that is if we make sure that there's still a bed left, and we keep a bed left in that hospital, because we didn't spread the virus that day. We followed the rules, and maybe we didn't travel somewhere. Or, you know, that's why we're all doing what we're doing.
Okay. Question here again, WhatsApp. Can you please ask Alam how a supermarket deep clean is done and how safe it is to fresh produce on the shelves?
Okay, so, I mean, and of course, understand we're learning all the time. So what happens in these supermarkets is they have these fogger spray things, and they actually walk through every single aisle. They sort of steam clean,
yes,
just about, I suppose that's the way to explain it, the whole place. It takes a while, and they do it. Everyone will have a different, slightly different regime, but you'll see them. They probably do it before they open on a Monday morning. And somebody was in there for 2-3 hours doing that kind of cleaning, and that in conjunction with the at the door with the sanitizer and the spacing, etc. And it's not foolproof, but it definitely is a lot better once they do it. And I mean, that's what it is. It's like somebody going in there and doing a fogging exercise where they fog everything. Yeah. Then of course the product that they use and all the documents that I've seen, the product that they use is no problem. You can ingest it. It's not gonna hurt you yourself. But I also see that people are saying that when you go and buy your shopping, when you come home, when you get home, before you unpack your shopping, you've got 2 tins of fish and you've got some fresh produce, wash them. Wash your hands. Wash them. put them away, wash your hands again, mm-hmm. and then you're actually going to put yourself in a better position. And I mean, I'm seeing this more and more, you know, because you don't know who picked up that tin of fish 20 minutes before you picked it up when you walked down that aisle.
Another question that just came in here is why, from Facebook Live, why can't the construction industry open? And we also deserve an income. This comes from Cindy Fervey. So,
absolutely. I fully agree. So some of the construction industry is open now. I know that in the Western Cape with our, because they've allowed, first of all, the public works type construction to open up first. So I think there are 282 construction companies who were lucky enough to be part of that public works opening. That could be roads or sewerage or you know, water infrastructure, electrical infrastructure, etc.
Yeah.
But I also agree, because for me, that missing middle is the subcontractor. You know, there's a Bucky, he's an electrician, he's got five guys who work for him, and that guy is not working at all. And all six people have not got an income, and they don't get UIF, etc. And that's why it's one of those 43 or 47 motivations was getting the construction industry back makes so much sense to me. And they can put the rules in place about social distancing, and most work they do is outside anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are spaced out in doing it. So it does make sense. It is also not available as yet, but we are pushing it hard.
Another message coming in also from a Facebook Live from Candace Lee Young. The question she asked is, when will lockdown levels be re-evaluated, and how frequently is the lockdown levels evaluated or considered? That's the question from Candace Lee.
Okay, so I don't know yet, because we haven't had a PCC with the president. Normally we have them on Saturday, so this last Saturday we didn't have one. I heard that the president was going to talk again tonight, but I'm not sure if we've seen anything on it,
mm-hmm.
Where he might have given a bit more clarity. So unfortunately, I don't know. I mean, I would presume that you at least need a week or two to analyze what the next level is doing. I must say to the people of the Western Cape, as much as I want, and all of these calls are saying, when can the construction guys get in back, and when can we all get back to normal, I get just as many calls to say, why aren't you taking us back to level 5, because you're the highest numbers in the country, and you need to actually slow this thing down, and we need to go back to 5. So we've got a lot of people motivating to actually lock it down even more, while a lot of people are saying, no, we must open it up. It is finding the balance and actually getting your information from very, you know, clever doctors on the one side and economists on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Another question that's come, in fact, this is, there's quite a few coming through, but I just want to just get to this one quickly. When can horse racing resume? This is from someone out in Stellenbosch. The industry is on the verge of collapse and thousands of jobs in jeopardy. So betting online and racing behind closed doors. That's the question.
Okay, I don't know the answer to that. But again, what I would do is say to the horse racing industry, package your new normal. This is how you're going to make sure that in your industry you're not going to spread, just like you've just said, you know, online betting or whatever. And because, of course, you can right now. I hope your jockeys are out there exercising your horses, because you can do that. But, of course, the competitive space. So I would suggest you put your package together of, this is how we're going to mitigate the risk of spread, and this is why we should be open, and this is how we're going to change our industry. Send it through to us, and we'll take it from there, and we'll put it through into the motivation. We've already got the 13 sectors up and running. People came to us and said, this is what we're going to do in the boat industry, this is what we're going to do in the nursery industry, this is what, and then our guys go in there and we get them operational.
Oh, fantastic. One of the things that's come up in the, obviously in the past few weeks, and this is not the first that I'm seeing, that is that when obviously you've got parents following the rules, regulations, everything that's coming, and obviously with kids, it's a bit different sometimes, because they're indoors all the time, and when they do have an opportunity to go outside, this question that comes from Eugene Swart, he says, my son was asked if he had proof of residence at Musenberg showing he stays within 5 kilometers. He was 1 kilometer home from when he was asked. Is this necessary when going out?
Sure. I mean, obviously, it says within 5 kilometers of your home, so I suppose a law enforcement officer got the right to say, are you within 5 kilometers of your home? You know, we've also got to use common sense when we're dealing with this on all sides.
Yeah.
You know, so some people push the envelope and I think aggravate some of our law enforcement officers. And I think they've got to have huge patience. Of course, I absolutely condemn when the law, whether it's military or police or law enforcement, when they overstep the mark. I mean, they have a duty of care to the customers, the citizens. But it also works both ways. So, yeah, it's one of those difficult things where, I mean, you know, how do you prove whether you're within 5 kilometers of your home? What is the radius of 5 kilometers from your home? These are the small nuts and bolts things around the regulations that sometimes we spend too much time on.
Correct.
And then, of course, people get arrested and then they've got to go and explain themselves in court and they get fines. And so it becomes difficult.
Mm. Any more questions? There's a few more coming through, but I know there's quite a lot of folks on Facebook Live. Send your questions, don't be shy. I know you're some people just watching, but ask a question. This is an opportunity. Ask your questions. You've still got a few minutes left. Send in your questions. This is from Nikki Meaton. This is like, can they change the level for hairdressers and beauticians? As it's killing our business. And I think we had this chat the last time as well, with the makeup and everything in our last session.
You know, that's direct contact, you know, one person to another. And obviously, again, you know, I don't write the regulations, but you would presume that when the regulators are sitting there, they said how much risk, and they would say, here's 50 kind of businesses, which ones are high risk and which ones are low risk. Okay. And I'm pretty certain that... whether it's a hairdresser or even in the medical space, you know, a dentist, or this is where it becomes difficult. It was my wife and I were talking about a friend of ours whose father is some facial medical specialist, and he says that in his profession, 70 of his professional facial medical professionals in Europe died from COVID. So doctors who die from COVID-19, and you think to yourself, if anybody should be able to protect themselves, it's the medical profession. It's difficult.
Yeah. Just a question also, you know, I note that especially in other parts of the world, like for example in the US, I see with the train stations now, after so many years, they're shutting down the train stations in order to kind of clean it out, steam, just like we were talking about steam cleaning and all that. In the event that people are now allowed, after lockdown, and people are allowed to go on trains and come to town, is there something similar in the plan of the works that they want to be done?
So already they are busy with that here. I mean, we've got systems in our public transport space like taxis where people are actually spraying down the vehicles every couple of hours. There's hand sanitizer in the vehicle. Maybe also this is a good point to say that we also at the same time have overloading of taxis and people putting themselves in harm's way when you're sitting in an overloaded taxi. We've actually set up, I've got it here, we've actually set up a cell phone messaging system that you can actually message the vehicle registration number and say this vehicle is overloaded and not following the, you know, it doesn't have its hand sanitizer, there's no masks, etc. And that's *134*234#. I'll say it again, *134*234#, and you can report any public transport space that is not adhering to the rules and putting you at risk as a commuter. Because we need to make sure it works both ways.
That's correct, yeah.
But there are those steam cleaning, and there's also a company who very kindly donated one of these like walk-through tunnels, and I think they're going to be deployed at one of the hotspot taxi ranks so that people have got an opportunity to almost walk through this mist. Like we've seen in other countries where you know. I mean, if I was contaminated while on the taxi, I've killed everything as I walked through.
Yeah. A message coming through here from Jackie Swanepoel. When will we know about lowering levels in districts that have no active cases for more than a month?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of our rural areas are like that at the moment. They've had very, very few cases. Of course, we must understand one thing, that if you've had no cases, that once you've got a few cases, they're going to spread and grow very fast. But there's still no clarity on the differential lockdown. So, you know, could, because the Central Karoo has had naught cases so far, should they be in absolutely level one or no lockdown whatsoever, no level at all, versus what kind of protection should they have? Now, we haven't got clarity on that. What we have got is that I, along with the MEC of Health and the Minister of Health, what we can do is motivate to go back to level five for areas, but not to go lower yet. So we don't have clarity on it.
Just another question. Why can't creches under 30 children in the entire creche open? We meet all the safety criteria. Parents need to work but have nowhere to leave the young children. This is essential service and there is no covered cases. And this comes from someone in the George area.
So we had that question earlier and I absolutely agree with it. Let us try and help you, especially if you're offering a service to essential workers. Please also come through to us on our website. Make contact with us and let us actually try and see what we can do for your individual case.
Premier Alan Windy, we want to thank you very much for coming in.
It's that time. Service at Western Cape at gov.za.
That's it. And also to thank you again for coming in and you know, taking time out and really indicating and you know, assisting everyone out there from different parts of South Africa and obviously those that's listening from around, that's tuning via Facebook Live and that's watching. Thank you so much for you know, just giving messages back and responding to their questions and giving them and also of course to those that send messages via WhatsApp and those of us called, even SMSing us. So we thank you and continue.
Can I just give a last message? I want to thank everyone. First of all, our frontline workers, our nurses, and they're nervous. I mean, our nurses are sitting there dealing with this thing and they get nervous.
Yeah.
Our ambulance drivers, thank you very much for what you're doing on the front line. Citizens, we've got to play our part, make sure that we all are keeping that social distancing, helping our neighbor. You know, say, excuse me, just remember, keep a bit of space. Yep. Use your mask. We need to help each other get through this. But can I really thank everybody who's playing their part? This is not easy. We're all in it together. And then maybe lastly, those people who are helping with feeding people who don't have anything to eat. I mean, just the goodwill, the money that's being raised, the food that's being dropped off by the ton, the NGOs, thank you very much for what you're doing. You are saving people's lives by what you are doing.
Thank you, Premier. All the best.
You are tuned into your number one community radio station in the Western Cape and number three in South Africa. Live from the heart of the Garden Route, Eden FM, your voice in paradise.